This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon and welcome again to All About Living. I'm Carol Colby. Always a pleasure to have you join us here at noon on WTDY, Madison 1670. Remember, this program is also available on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Colby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. Well, you are in for a special, special treat today. I don't know if treat is actually the correct word. I have an amazing woman with an amazing story sitting in the studio with me. And just as a little bit of background, let me throw out a couple of facts to you, and that kind of sets the scene for Terry to go ahead and tell her story to you. And sometimes we feel that life isn't exactly treating us well, life isn't fair. When you hear Terry's story, you'll somehow feel a little bit more fortunate if on even bad days things seem to evolve as they should. So without further ado, let me just tell you about Terry and the background information. The Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired says that every 7 minutes, someone in America will become blind or visually impaired. And by 2030, the estimated number of visually impaired Americans 65 and older will double to 7 million. So this is a concern, a disability that really needs to be addressed because vision impairment is one of the main causes of loss of independence. Well, that is what happened to Terry Gilliland, and Terry is certainly not 65 years old or older. She is a beautiful woman. I believe that you must be, can I tell your age, Terry, or you are, can I say that you're in your 40s?
Yes.
Okay, I'll say
thank
you're,
you.
But you have quite a background. You have lived through and you have overcome three traumatic serial episodes in your life. You have experienced going blind. You have a husband whose life was forever changed because of a near-fatal motorcycle accident. And your son was diagnosed with brain cancer at the age of 15. And each one of those things kind of not only happened in progression, but also intertwined with each other. But you have not always been blind. This is something that was part of your genetic makeup, it turns out. And actually, it wasn't until your adult life that blindness began to enter your life. So with that, I want to welcome you to our program and for your willingness to share some of your story. The entire story is beautifully stated in your book, In a Moment, which I have read, and it fills in so many more of the details. So I highly encourage people to take an opportunity to read your story in your book, In a Moment, and we'll tell more about how we can get a hold of that later. But please go ahead and tell us your story and when you discovered that blindness was going to be a part of your life.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much, Carol. This is a great opportunity for me, for many of your listeners, to hear the story. I just want to say that I was very hesitant about sharing this story. As I was living through some of these things, I still kept the perspective that all people have obstacles and challenges and difficulties in their life. And I didn't really think that my story was any different than others. But as I started getting myself back together, went back to work, and I used a transportation service in our community where we hire drivers, anyone with a disability or over the age of 60 can utilize this service. And I began talking with the driver, who he himself had been a writer for our local newspaper. And he kept saying, you need to write this down. This is a wonderful story in the perspective that you are sitting here with a smile on your face after you've lived through all of this. So I really appreciate my co-author, co-editor, if you will, Ed Gorelli for helping me with this project. And now I'll start with my own idea, blindness. When I was growing up as a child, I had no vision problems. I grew up in a typical family, one of six siblings, a middle-class family. Dad worked at the local factory, mom stayed at home, and really nothing that would lead me to believe that my life would be so dramatically changed as an adult. It wasn't until I was going off to college when my mom would often double up on appointments, and I heard my eye doctor say, just at a routine exam, something looks funny here. Something you never want to hear a doctor say.
Exactly.
But he again said something isn't correct. He was just an optician. Of course, we needed then to see an optometrist, an ophthalmologist, many tests. We actually ended up here at the university hospitals where not only was I, but both of my brothers and one of my younger sisters diagnosed with a rare eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa. Now, apparently, it seems that both of my parents had carried this gene, a recessive gene, but they didn't know it. There was no blood test or eye test or way to tell that they carried this. And
the fact that they both carried it, this was really
very
a rare thing.
Very rare.
I mean, if you try to, it's like winning the lottery and being the lottery winner.
Correct.
That it's that remote of a chance.
And then even at that, each child only had a 25% chance of developing the condition. So to have four out of six children who did develop, the odds are just, like you said, one in 10 million that this would happen. At the time, none of us were really having symptoms. There wasn't any real significant impairment that any of us could pinpoint. For me, I remember being a little more hesitant when it was dark out or going from a movie theater or a very dimly lit restaurant. I would be a little hesitant, but I thought, well, the lights are out. No one can see. It's dark out.
And that's what you knew. That was normal to you.
Yes. But apparently that was the first symptom of this condition.
And you really didn't know you had it until you must have been 17 or 18 years old?
Yeah, almost 19 years old, yes, before I realized, well, when the diagnosis came. And at the time, the ophthalmologist said, by the time you're 40, you will be blind. Mm. And I did what probably a lot of young people do if they hear news such as this. I picked up my baggage and I promptly moved to the state of denial, where I lived for many years, very happily.
And that's common.
Not wanting to think about it, not wanting to address it, not wanting to prepare myself in any way because that prospect was very frightening. I too had the stereotypic beliefs about blindness that it was all or nothing. Either you could see or you didn't see. I didn't understand that there were varying degrees of impairment. But I came to realize that even today, people will look at me and say, you don't look blind. Your eyes move. Your gestures are someone who is sighted. But I have been sighted my whole life, and I understand communication through eye contact and looking at people, and that's important to me. The stereotypes of blindness, I think because of your statistics, as you stated earlier, you will see less and less of these stereotypes being evident. In other words, dark glasses or eyes that don't look just quite right. And for the most part, you probably won't be able to tell if someone is blind or legally blind or not.
Looking at you, and I will support, you know, those comments that have been made to you, I look at you, you look me directly in the eye, you shake my hand, you smile, you have a beaming smile, beautiful, beautiful woman, and I would never suspect that you are blind,
right?
But you do have a a white cane, yes. And that entered your life at a particular moment when maybe you decided to come back home from the state of denial,
yes.
And accept the fact that you were going blind and you were going to have to learn to cope.
I was going to have to learn to be blind,
mm-hmm.
Which was, again, you can only imagine. I've been sighted my whole life. How do you be blind? I didn't know how to do that. But certainly, I had to accept that this is who I was now. This is how I was put together. And if I didn't accept myself, then no one else around me would accept me. My family certainly was trying to cope the best they could, but they didn't know what to do either. They didn't know what would be helpful or what wouldn't be helpful. And it really was putting that white cane in my hand that made all the difference. I really felt a weight being lifted off my shoulder, that tension, that anxiety that I would feel in certain situations. People would be impatient with me because I might move a little slower or not quite see what I needed to see in order to function. And people wouldn't know what to do. What's wrong with her? What is she not quite here or, mm-hmm. You know, not paying attention? And so that white cane really became...
Well, it was a communications tool.
A communication. I call it a tool of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
It actually allowed other people to say, okay, I see that there's a problem here and maybe I can be of assistance to this woman. Instead of saying, "What? Get out of my way. What's
right.
the problem? Why aren't we doing what we need to do here?"
So. But you did. You went to college.
Mm-hmm.
You got a degree in psychology.
Yes.
You went to the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And all of that after the diagnosis of that blindness was going to be entering your life. And was it after college that you began to use the white cane?
Oh, no. No, it was not until well into my mid-30s.
Okay.
So the progression of this condition, at least for our family, was very slow. It started with some night vision problems, some gaps in peripheral vision, but our central vision stayed intact for a long time. I mean, even into my 30s, when I was using a cane, I could still see print because I had that central tunnel of vision. Now, most people will think that if you only have a tunnel of vision, that everything in the periphery is black. But in truth, people with vision impairment find that it's just not there. It's just not there. It's not black. It's just a gap. And your brain tries to piece it together. It might help you see that maybe that white wall, you're not seeing the whole wall, but the brain will piece that together for you in those gaps. Now, where the gaps might be, there might be a picture hanging on the wall that you never see because the brain filled in white all around
okay.
it. And so I'm just trying to give you a perspective of what is vision impairment or legal blindness, if you will. It's not blackness.
We're going to have to stop for a break, and when we come back, we want to continue hearing your story
yes.
about your blindness, your marriage, then the accident that your husband had,
yes.
and your three children, and then your son being diagnosed with
mm-hmm.
brain cancer. It seems like it's more than one person should be able to be asked to handle, but you were, and you have done it beautifully and with such an inspirational manner for all of us. Our guest today on All About Living is Terry Gilliland. Her book is In a Moment, and it tells her amazing, powerful story, and we are going to return with our visit with Terry after these messages from our sponsors. This segment of our program is brought to you by the Medicine Shop Monona, caring beyond prescriptions, and Independent Living, your connection to an independent life. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670 WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. I'm Carol Kobe, and this segment is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center, and Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. Our guest today is Terry Gilliland, and at the age of 19, Terry was diagnosed with an eye disease called retinitis pigmentosis. And what this means and what the doctor told her on the day that the diagnosis was final, that bluntly, you will be blind by the age of 40. And that's exactly what happened. And Terry is now in her 40s, and she is here with us today to tell her story of understanding the world of vision impairment, the story of her life and her husband, who, after being her support system, was in a motorcycle accident himself where he was nearly killed, and dealing with that injury and the work that had to be done with him to bring him back to the life that they currently share today. And then their 15-year-old son diagnosed with brain cancer right after that. So it seems like an overwhelming story and a lot for one person to be asked to handle. But Terry has done it with grace and inspiration, and she's here to share her story with us today. We have heard about your life when you grew up with your five other siblings. There were six of you in the family. Four out of the six have been diagnosed with this disease because it turns out it was a genetic disorder, a recessive gene that both of your parents carried. And the risk of that happening is just very, very rare. But in your case, in your family's case, it did happen. And four of the children then developed this disease. You went to college, got a degree in psychology. When did you meet your husband? At what point?
Just before the summer before I left for college, basically. We had run into one another, and I had traveled down to a distant city, New Orleans, and he had been living there. And so it was very odd that we grew up in the same city. We actually went to the same high school, but we never knew each other, and here we met 1,000 miles away. So you never know how things will occur in your life.
And then he came back, and you're living in Kenosha, is that correct?
Yes.
And he came back, and the romance continued.
Yes, it did.
And when were you married?
Just before I graduated from college. We married that May.
Did he know about your illness?
Yes, he did. I was very honest, and I just said, again, in my state of denial, but I don't think it's really anything to worry about. I'm thinking they're going to find a cure by that time. Who knows if I'll even live to be 40 years old. So as a young adult, you have a perspective that's very immediate. Let's deal with the now. And my thoughts of the future were that something would change.
So your honeymoon kind of was, he entered the world of going to the state of denial with you to some extent.
Yes.
Yeah, because you go with the moment and what you know now.
Yes, exactly.
And you're young and you're thinking that, this isn't going to work out that way.
Sure, we're buying a home, we're having children, we're getting our careers established. So we were dealing with those kinds of important moments instead of thinking, well, what's going to happen in 15 or 20 years from now?
And you had three children, two daughters and a son.
Yes.
And wasn't it your husband who actually, when it was obvious that the symptoms that the doctor said you would begin to experience, you started to experience, wasn't it your husband who actually encouraged you to become more independent and to begin to own the fact, to own your blindness?
Yes, it really was, which is, again, people enter your lives and are in your lives for a certain reason. Certainly, my husband saw me bumping into things and really hurting myself, bruising and skinning my knees and falling over things. And I think he was a little fearful of my safety. I also think that I began to blame him. you need to watch, you mm-hmm. need to tell me, you need to be my eyes.
It's your fault.
Yes.
Yes, and if you took better care of me or watched out more, this wouldn't happen.
It's that process of adjustment, the shock and denial, and then you're in the anger phase. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody else needs to take responsibility, because the thought of me taking responsibility really meant a significant life change. And I didn't think I could do it.
But what did he do that really helped you?
He said two things. One is, if you don't learn to do this for yourself, none of us are going to know what to do, which made me angry when he said that. I thought, well, how do you know? You don't know what it's like for me, and you're telling me that I need to learn these skills, but it's not that simple. And number two, we had traveled to California, and he put my white cane in the carry-on bag and said, look what I brought for you. Again, a surge of anger. How dare you? This is my decision, not your decision. And you would think that someone who had the diagnosis and knew the future held a blindness would embrace using a white cane, but I found that a very difficult perspective, because it changed the way I presented myself to the world. It made a statement, which I felt was a very negative statement, defective or disabled or incapable. And I didn't want that people would think of me in that way.
Well, the future became now.
Yes.
What the diagnosis was, what was going to happen
yes.
later on in your life.
Sure. I was in the moment.
Yes,
right,
you were
now.
You, exactly. In,
I
in
had
a moment.
To deal.
Yes.
But, you know, again, you need a great support system. I will tell anybody who has a disability, leading a productive life, using the resources available to you, and changing the way that you do things. I learned that doing things differently didn't mean bad or less than or worse than. It was just a change. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at a watch, I push a button and a clock tells me what time it is. Either way, I know what time it is. And so eventually I coped. I did cope with all of this. I went back to work. My kids understood that they couldn't just walk in the back door, flip off the shoes, backpacks, and coats in the doorway and leave them there, or mom would get hurt. So my kids had to change the way they conducted their lives as well. But we did. I think when you have knowledge, when you get the information that you need, what will be helpful, and you start to share that, things get easier.
Well, and I think what was helpful for them, from what I read in the book, and even with your being here today and what I read in your book, helped me to help you, or so we could together come into the studio. Mm-hmm. But you gave them the tips of how their behavior could help you.
Correct.
And you weren't angry with them because they did this or they did that.
Right.
But you explained to them what they could do that would be helpful and how to be helpful.
Yes.
And somebody, it's with like anything in life, we need to learn. Mm-hmm. And all of us need to learn. Our guest today on All About Living is Terry Gilliland. Her book is In a Moment. It's available on Amazon.com. And also it's available through the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, and you can go to wcblind.org and find out information about how to reach them and also how to get the book. We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, this is just such a short time, this program, to hear your entire story, but we want to hear about your husband's accident, your son's brain cancer, and how it's all come together, and how you have grown and become the glued family in moving forward the way you are. Mm-hmm. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Kobe, Madison 1670 WTDY.
And we're back. This segment of our program is brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. Our guest today on All About Living is Terry Gilliland. And Terry, at the age of 19, was diagnosed with a disease called retinitis pigmentosa. And that long word meant that by the age of 40, she would be blind. And that's exactly what happened. By the time, and if I can just recollect what you've been saying, Terry, that in your mid-30s, things were getting very dull as far as your vision was concerned, and you finally began to use a white cane after your husband urged you and encouraged you to do it, and at first you felt it was your decision, and you were denying the fact that you were at that point. But through his guidance and inspiration and your family coming together to, this was something that you shared together rather than just your individual challenge in life, that you worked through that. Things were going well and you were beginning to accept totally your life of continued vision impairment. And then your husband didn't come home for dinner one evening. And can you explain what happened?
Yes. Well, it's that moment in life that we all kind of dread. Someone hasn't arrived home on time, and then the phone rings. And it was the local hospital informing me that my husband had been involved in a very serious motorcycle accident and that I needed to go to a distant hospital 40 minutes away. My husband was being flight for life. And it took me a little bit to kind of collect myself and process this information, as well as then scrambling for transportation as I could no longer drive due to my vision loss. Once that occurred, walking into the hospital, I learned that nearly every bone on the right side of my husband's body had been broken, cracked, you know, displayed, you know, before the world, coming out of his skin, as well as two skull fractures and seven tears on the right and left frontal lobes of his brain, leaving him with a traumatic brain injury. And that was probably the most serious, although all these other broken bones were very serious. Once someone sustains head trauma like that, that can leave them in a very critical state, possibly slipping into coma, possibly stopping breathing. Your brain pretty much controls everything that we do that we don't even think about. And my husband clung to life. He was strong. He worked out. He was physically in such good shape that many doctors told me had he not been in the shape he was, he probably would not have made it.
But the brain injury really was the most difficult to deal with
yes.
in the recuperation, because when you have that kind of brain injury, there are personality changes, there are memory
right.
loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so you went to the hospital on a daily basis. But sometimes he didn't know you. Often he rejected you. And this wasn't just in a momentary passing for a few days, but this was a long process of renewing a relationship and getting to know each other and actually having your relationship change as a result.
Yes. I say today that the man I married never came home from that fateful June day. I got a new husband, and I never even got a divorce.
How long was his recuperation? How long was he in the hospital?
For several months, he was in the hospital, and then for almost a year after that, in the physical, occupational, speech, brain injury rehab. Thankfully, his employer held his job for him. He was a pipe fitter with a local utility, and they really wanted to keep him on. He was a very conscientious, top-notch worker. And thankfully, as he recovered, the company was willing to put him on light duty, again, retrain him, give him some different tools that he might need in order to be successful at work. so that did occur after time. But initially, the anger, the rejection, it was very difficult for me, especially because I couldn't see the look on his face. So the voice coming from him was something I only heard when we argued. And now I was hearing it on a regular basis, all the time. That's how he spoke to me. And I wasn't sure, could we make it? Would we survive this? Many of his memories, both short and long term, are gone. It broke my heart when my kids would say to him, "Dad, do you remember when?" And he would say, "No." But we've taken those moments as opportunity. I tell the kids, I would tell them then go get the pictures, go get the schoolwork that you made that day and share that with Dad. Help him remember. Get the souvenirs that we got from our various family vacations so that he could help to integrate some of those memories back into who he was. Does he really remember? He tells me no. He says that he sees himself in those photographs, but he doesn't remember being there, really.
How difficult this must have been for your children. First mm-hmm. of all, they were in the beginning years of getting used to you with your vision impairment mm-hmm. and moving into using the cane and learning what they needed to know to be a positive source of help and understanding to you. And then their father has this accident, and he's becoming this different person and basically rejecting all of you at first because yes. he wasn't really quite sure who he was or who you were.
Yes. He needed some time to sort of reassemble himself. And we had to do that all together. I felt it was very important that not as he was becoming this different man, that he didn't leave us behind, that we were still part of his life. And so it was very important to me. We did attempt counseling, family counseling, so that we could stay together and stay intact, learn new ways of communicating with one another. I had to learn, this was a very difficult lesson for me, as you might guess, because I can talk on and on and on. And I've had to learn to be quiet. There are times when my husband cannot filter the background noise, and if I begin to talk to him, he can easily be confused or distracted. It was hard for me because my world is verbal, it's audio. I need information. And so sometimes when we would be out walking together, he would lead me into things or bump me into things, and I might say, "Why are you doing that?" Or he would look at me and say, "Why are you doing that?" And I would say, "I'm blind, hon, remember?" And, "Well, you need to stop that," he'd say to me. And it's like, "I can't." So I've mm-hmm. learned that keeping my cane in my hand, even when I'm traveling with him, helps him remember that I can't see. He did lose vision in his right eye due to a blowout fracture around the eye socket. He also lost his sense of taste and smell, are significantly diminished. Some of that has returned a little bit, but not to the point. He describes it as if you have a really bad cold where that sense of taste and smell is kind mm-hmm. of not quite there. But that loss of the right eye was very hard for me. I really felt like the thunderclouds were over my house and that darkness was all around us. How could this happen? I was losing vision in both eyes. Now he lost vision in one eye. But as you will read in my book, I try to keep a sense of humor about life in general. And so I knew that when we told the kids we have our eye on you, we meant it literally.
Yeah.
There's only one eye between the two of us.
You know, as long as you're alive and living and breathing, it's just such a lesson. No matter what the trauma, the tragedy, whatever, somewhere find a ray of sunshine, a bit of humor to just it's like a deep breath to get through something.
It's a coping mechanism.
Yes.
It helps you cope, finding the humor in this.
I wonder if your kids found the humor. We've got our eye on you.
Yes.
we're going to
appreciate that, yeah, as adults.
We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, your traumatic events were not over. Probably the hardest one of all to accept was when for any of us, when our children are hurt or something terrible happens to them, and certainly that entered your world as well. Our guest today on All About Living is Terry Gilliland. Her book, In a Moment, is available on Amazon.com. It's also available through the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. It is an amazing story, an inspirational story, and moving, and reading it, Mom, I feel that even my life has been slightly changed as a result of it. It's just wonderful, Terry. We'll be back with more, our final minutes of conversation with Terry Gilliland, after these messages from our sponsors.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back. This hour has just flown by. Terry Gilliland is here. She and Ed Groelli are the co-authors of a book called In a Moment. And In a Moment is available on Amazon.com and also through the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. Go to wcblind.org. You go to them because Terry is blind. And it's her story of blindness that was diagnosed when she was about 19 years old. She was diagnosed with a condition called retinitis pigmentosa, and the doctor at that point told her by the age of 40 you will be blind. She had no idea this was going to be a part of her life, but that's exactly what did happen. She was married, though, and had three children, and in the midst of getting used to the world of vision impairment, she received a call that her husband was in a near-fatal motorcycle accident with injuries, broken bones throughout his body, and traumatic brain injuries as well, which resulted in his becoming a different person. And it has taken a long time for you and your family to get to know each other again and to go through the struggles of his own recuperation. But then your traumatic events were not over. You had one more. Your son. Tell us what happened, Terry.
Well, while we're coping with and reintegrating as a family after my husband's accident, our son began having difficulty at school. 14 and a half, we thought, well, you know, maybe he's reacting to Dad's accident. Perhaps this is a boy who has a lot on his plate. His mother's blind and his dad has changed. And so school counselors and teachers assured me this would pass. But he began not turning in assignments, eventually skipping school, as well as having some physical symptoms. He would have this sort of gangly way of walking with me, and I would say, son, you need to walk straight when you're walking with me because you're bumping me into things, you're leading me off of curbs. And he'd say, I am walking straight. And I think, well, maybe because he's a teenager, boys often have growth spurts where the brain didn't catch up with the body. We would pass that off. But then he began complaining of a stomach ache nearly every day. I have a stomach ache. And again, well, he's just trying to get out of going to school. He wouldn't want to get up in the morning. A lot of sleep. He was sleeping a lot. And I know teenagers do sleep a lot, but those kinds of things started in the back of my mind as a mother. You feel like you know your children very well.
So you insisted on a doctor taking a closer look at him.
Yes, I did. And eventually he was found to have some stomach acid reflux and other stomach gastric distress problems, a lot of different medication. And we really went the gamut of diagnoses in about a maybe 8-month period, from ADD or ADHD to anxiety to depression to acid reflux to IBS. And the list went on and on and on.
And it wouldn't have been unusual.
They would medicate him.
He was a teenager, and he had to go through your increasing vision impairment, your blindness, and then his father's accident and his father's personality changes and meeting his family all over again on new terms. So it wouldn't be unusual for a teenager to have these kinds of reactions.
Correct. And it wasn't until a school conference. And I went home that night, and I really felt like something was very wrong. And that night, I had this very vivid dream of someone tapping me on the shoulder and telling me, get your son to a doctor. And they kept tapping me on the shoulder. So the next day, by now, this doctor's office is used to hearing my voice. Is it the stomach again? Well, yes, it's still the stomach, but also, at school conference last night, my son said that his mouth didn't work right and that he couldn't play his trumpet anymore. And she said, you're bringing him to the doctor because he can't play his trumpet? And I said, well, yes, that, but also I've had a dream that I need to get him to see the doctor today. A dream, she said. And I'm sure she made that appointment with her eyes rolled to the ceiling. But we went. They did a very extensive examination, and the doctor felt that perhaps my son had some nerve condition in his face requiring an MRI to confirm or deny.
So we don't run out of time. Let's move on to the
diagnosis,
because I don't want people to be hanging and wondering what happened.
We did get the MRI, where it was discovered that our son had a tumor on his brainstem, in and on his brainstem. It's called a brainstem glioma astrocytoma. Very, very rare. Probably even more rare than my own eye condition and the fact that both of my parents carried. My son underwent brain surgery. It was discovered that it was cancer. It was reduced by about half between the surgery and the radiation. Again, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, as my husband had gone through, absorbed our lives. Every moment was taken up with this. Now, by this time, my son is approaching 16 years old, 16 and a half years old. He's trying to integrate who he is, and it became very difficult for him. He just started rebelling against everything. Just let me go, Mom, let me go.
So he had then moved into a world of addiction and difficulties.
His self-medication, trying to cope in his own way. Again, with this particular diagnosis, there is no guarantee. Half of the tumor is still in and on his brainstem. At this point in his life, we are now 6 years out, it is stable. It hasn't grown. It hasn't changed. However, the high dose of radiation that was given to him did leave him disabled, both physically and cognitively disabled. That was the only way to save his life. So as a parent, you look back, did we do the right thing? Of course we did. Eventually, my son did learn to cope. There was a time I refer to as the Jerry Springer days. My son was addicted to many different drugs. Some were prescribed, some weren't, some were mixed with alcohol. He was trying to figure out who he was, because what he had learned at a young age was that he was sick, and he was cancer, and he was dying. And so it was very hard. You can only imagine. My heart broke for my son on a regular basis, seeing the struggle, the internal struggle to assemble and find some sort of self-esteem in all of this.
And then your daughter's trying to cope with all of this, and they were
witnessing,
have felt like on the
helpless
outside and helpless, and everybody had such traumatic things going on in their lives, their mother, their father, their brother. And where did they fit into all of this? How are you all doing today?
We are all wonderful today. I will have to tell you that life has a way of pulling you along the journey, whether you're kicking or screaming or whether you're walking along joyfully. Life does go on. And if you are continuing to learn that is the most important part, that you are always learning something. My daughters are doing well. I have one that is a teacher in South Korea. She teaches English to Korean students. My son is going to be married in the spring, and my youngest daughter is finishing her college degree. My husband and I are very happy. We have found a new normal, as I call it. Life is always changing. The one thing that I really impress upon people is that you have control over really one thing in your life, and that is your attitude. And it is your attitude toward life that will determine life's attitude toward you.
What are some of the tips that you have to people when they are encountering someone who has an obvious physical or mental challenge? And not that we all don't, but sometimes yes. it is more apparent, and some people do need at the moment.
Yes.
In that moment, they do need some kind of support.
Well, I think most of the things that I talk about, certainly we can get very specific to different kinds of disabilities and what is helpful and what isn't. But I call these things sort of rules of common sense. And the first one is just to look at the person you're speaking to. People with disabilities are often ignored, overlooked, or spoken to as if they're not even in the room. So look at the person you're talking to. Make eye contact with them. Let them know that what they have to say is important.
We have about a minute left, so if you can get through the others real quickly, because they're just jewels.
Yes, speak in a normal tone of voice. Don't shout at people with disabilities because it's interpreted in different ways. Ask how you can be helpful. Sometimes that's just a very simple thing. Ask, can I help you? Someone with a disability often knows what helps or what doesn't help. And just respect people's personal space. Don't grab, don't pull, don't push. Respect who they are.
Terry Gilliland, let me spell your last name, G-I-L-L-I-L-A-N-D. Teresa is your formal name, T-H-E-R-E-S-A. You and Ed Gorelli wrote the book In a Moment. It is available at Amazon.com, also through the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. It is your amazing story and inspiration for all of us. And you are also available to give talks and to share your story with groups of people. And how would somebody contact you?
At this point, I'm going to give a phone number with area code 262-653-9933. Please call me. I am happy to travel anywhere to talk about the book, my experiences, and my life lessons, if you will.
And to help all of us have the positive attitude about life, so life, no matter what is dealt us, can be a positive experience for us.
Yes.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you so much,
Jake, for your producing our program today. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This program is also available on carolcobyradio.com. Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.